Hello, Mr. Phillips. It is OPA 47.
47? Did we go back in time? Or am I crazy?
Last one I had saved was 46.
Oh, you know what? We took a week off there, didn't we?
Yeah, this is kind of weird. Odd bird day to be recording. Not at nighttime. Also weird.
Yes. Still technically PM, but in the afternoon instead of the evening.
Yeah, so it's a little bit strange. We are waiting to I guess my other thought for a second show was just complete beer show.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully after some rain passes here, there will be some beer being brewed.
There will be beer, yes. yeah, so yes. This will be, if Mother Nature cooperates, and it looks like it's, just for your weather report today, it looks like it's clearing up a little bit. So that should be useful for our listeners to know.
Right. Yep. They always want the weather in Columbus, Ohio.
At the time of our recording.
Yep.
So
very important to them.
If things cooperate, I'll be able to be there for my first taste of actual, what would you say, brewing? Is that the brewing process?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, because you've only gotten to taste the fruits of the labor so far.
Oh, yeah.
You've not seen any of the labor itself.
Yes, so I can't wait to see how it actually goes together. I'm going to take my first sip of the, speaking of fruits of the labor here.
I have some thoughts on it right now. So,
maybe it's just me, but I really like it.
Okay, I thought it was a little bit flat, so maybe if I let it sit in the bottle for another week at least, it won't be quite as flat. But outside of that, I do still like it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of bubbles going on, but I don't know. I like the taste, so
that's good.
That's going to be a big mark in its favor, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, we will have to, there will be other samples given out to other persons. So, we'll see if that makes the cut to the wedding.
Ooh, yeah, we're going to see if that is gets enough votes. So, remember, text your votes before the end of the show.
Yep.
So that your vote will count.
And if your vote really wants to count, you got to give me some cheddar.
Oh, you know, what are you, like a Seth Blatter over here? No, actually, you were much more foolish than Seth Blatter because you were requesting...
requesting said money.
Yes.
Yes, that is a bit naive on my part.
You really want to rethink that. But, you know... If you guys are hearing this, obviously we didn't figure out how to edit the tape to get that
yes.
part out of here.
I wanted you to give me money for our Kickstarter. That's it. I just didn't get to the end of my. End of my sentence.
What I guess these places could have their own Kickstarter programs, and then people would be able to give them money. You know, no questions asked. I think you might have figured out FIFA 2.0 here, Kevin.
But I should do that. Well, actually, what they should do is convert to Bitcoin so that people are not actually exchanging any currency.
You know what? That
or
could
any
be
paperwork.
Another option, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's what FIFA should start doing.
Maybe we should back up a little bit and talk about the fact that FIFA's been in the news for a lot of things. It seems like recently here.
The United States, along with Switzerland, which that was the other thing that I did kind of think about. I'm like, oh, because normally Switzerland would not cooperate in this situation.
Yes, that is like a kind of change of attitude, I would say, for the Swiss, because normally they're known for kind of, being secretive with, Swiss bank accounts and... not being really you know, being able to look the other way, basically, for violations of international law, maybe.
Right.
And kind of being...
They are neutral.
Neutral, yes.
Bitches.
But they have actually been willing to go along with the U.S. in this case to arrest some of these high-ranking officials in FIFA.
Yeah, it was 14 officials, I believe, was the final count that were arrested.
And FIFA, of course, I guess to back up a little farther, is the is the international organization that controls the World Cup, probably most notably.
Yeah, because it's the Federation of International Football Associations, I believe.
Oh, there you go.
So.
That's even giving us a good foundation to build on there. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah. And,
so.
It's kind of funny. I guess there was an E60 documentary on him also. Yeah, the warrants got executed on the officials this week. But you were saying that the E60 documentary came out just prior to this happening.
Yes, so I feel like it was unplanned. Like, they didn't know that... Or maybe the official... Maybe the Swiss were changed by watching the... Maybe they watched the documentary and were like, oh, geez, wow, this guy really is evil. Because I think we'll probably be linking to the documentary. You can watch it in... five parts now. I think they added another part after the rest this week.
Correct.
But it was pretty interesting. And they had a lot of, you know, great sinister-looking shots of Sepp Blatter himself, the president of FIFA, president for life, as they say in the documentary.
Yeah, well, he's been in there since 1998. The E60 kind of implied that he pushed out the former leader.
Who basically seemed to be like, I don't know, things were not in great shape when this former leader was in charge by himself. That, Sepp, which is a great name, I can't deny it.
Oh, yes.
But I think it's his much, middle name.
Yeah, it's much better than going by Joseph.
Joseph Blatter, yeah, that's no good. You got to go set, or Joe Blatter's no good either. So yeah, he made the right choice to go by his middle name, I think. But it really seems like he, well, yeah, I mean, he's using the setup of FIFA to his advantage. So part of it, when he came in, like even before he took over, he was able to make them profitable by selling like the TV rights and licensing rights and things like that. Because before the 90s, really, I don't think FIFA was, well, FIFA wasn't as big as it is at all. Like they said, there was 12 employees when he started.
But he's been there 40 years though now. Like he's been president for,
that's true. You're right.
The last, 17, I believe.
Yeah. So when he started to take over is when FIFA started getting bigger and kind of,
well, know. It was, I mean, they said that he helped grow it with the former president, but yeah, I guess he felt like he was probably better than the former president. The guy seems like he thinks he's better than everyone, to be completely frank.
Yes.
If I may.
And we should point out that he's not a Frank. He's actually Swiss. So just in case anyone was confused there. But you may be Frank.
Good. I'm glad that we got that out there for the kids. That is our English lesson of the week. Lesson. And of course, I've got to screw up the word lesson as I mumble it.
You gave us all a lesson today, Kevin. And I think, you know, speaking for the listeners, we thank you.
I'm going to give you a lashing after this.
A tongue lesson. Well, anyway. So, yeah, he really, he seems to be using the setup of the organization in that there's 220 or 210 something around 200 plus members of FIFA.
Right. And everyone gets paid the same.
And everyone's vote counts the same. So, like they said, a country, I don't know if it's even a country, but Montserrat, which is this little island in the ocean that is like a British territory, I think. But there's like less than 6,000 people there. And they get the same vote and the same amount of money as the United States or Germany. So it's like pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So these little countries are easy to pick off, basically. I mean, they're like ripe for bribing, right?
Yes, they are ripe for bribing. That was made fairly clear. They did not try to accuse any of the large countries of being the bribers.
Or being the bribees, really.
Right.
Yeah. Because, like, the Qatari, basically it centered on Qatar. I mean, Russia, too, I think.
Yeah, it was kind of funny.
The same day, basically, Russia and Qatar were given the World Cups for consecutive World Cups in 2018 and 2022. And so people, that was kind of like just concentrating it all in one day there. I don't know. I mean, the guy's got balls, if nothing else.
Well, yeah, and you would think that you'd stretch something out like that. I mean, not your balls, but these two decisions.
Nice. I'm glad you specified that, because I was, you know, there was a question forming in my mind, a little thought bubble above my head, but you cleared that up. Thanks.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm glad that I cleared that up. They normally didn't announce it for that far in advance.
Mm, yeah, that is why.
2022 is still a decent chunk away. Although I think that it was usually about 8 years in advance that they had the announcement. It's kind of similar to the Olympics, where they announce it far enough in advance so that they can actually construct all of the places that they need to.
Right, to build the stadiums and things.
Right. So, I mean, there is a pretty good in advance, but this was 2010. I can't believe that it was that, like, that was one of those things, and I'm like, oh my lord, that was that long ago? Because I just remember reading about the designs that they were going to try to do for some of these stadiums in Qatar. Like, I guess I didn't think about the corruption part of it when I heard about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no,
I don't follow the politics of FIFA.
No, I don't as much either, but I remember them. I remember somebody saying, like, this is pretty suspicious. Like, Qatar, like, really, Qatar? Oh, and I think it was John Oliver who, at the time of the Brazil World Cup, was in around the time, I guess, that Qatar was selected. He came out with some video, or, well, his show, some video. yeah, his show on HBO about how this is such a weird choice to have Qatar because they basically don't have any, like, soccer tradition there.
Right, and they did mention that in the C60 video, too. There's only 60,000 people in the country. it's just,
that's roughly the size of Altoona, just to get people... just to get some perspective here.
Oh my gosh. Like, I was like, man, that's really small. But then to say that it's the size of Altoona, I'm like, oh.
Like, yeah, like the central, that area, you know, the Altoona metropolitan region, I'd say, would be probably 60,000. So, yeah, that's not a lot of people.
No.
To be hosting a World... You can imagine a World Cup being hosted in Altoona,
well,
I'm sure.
And especially with the fact that I do remember, I believe it's a minimum of 50,000 at least that the stadium has to hold.
To be able to hold the World Cup?
Yeah, to be able to have a World Cup match in it.
Right.
Because they had to worry about that when they came to the U.S., because that's why they always played these huge venues.
Mm-hmm. But they could have, you know, and that's the thing, like, there's no way that after these stadiums are played in for the World Cup that they're ever going to be useful again, because there's only 60,000 people in the country, so it's not like you need a 50,000 seat stadium. Plus, no one really likes to play, you know, no one is really into, it's not like you have world-class soccer teams going to be playing there, because no one is really playing soccer in particularly there, right? It's not like a, And, like, yeah, the outdoor temperature is going to be, like, 110 degrees in the summertime.
And then that's what was so interesting about the designs that I saw. Because they were all trying to incorporate some type of sun abatement in them. So that, and it was still kind of crazy. Like, it was still like, oh, the ground temperature is still going to be 90 some odd degrees.
Oh, yeah, but it's going to be so cool. So, I mean, are they planning on having outdoor stadiums, or is it all going to be inside, I wonder?
I don't know, because I remember seeing, like, these weird, and I knew that they were kind of far-fetched, like, these weird clouds that they would use to block the sun.
Oh, my God. This sounds like some kind of doomsday scenario here. Isn't this what happened in The Matrix, when the people scorched the sky so that...
It almost reminded me of, remember when we were talking about the sucking the carbon out of the atmosphere?
Right.
Yeah, that's what this thing kind of reminded me of, is that weird, freaky, like, we're really trying to skirt nature kind of thing going on here.
Yeah, and we were also talking, I think this was our episode on geoengineering, I believe.
Yes.
When, and, yeah, of course, it reminds me of the... that movie, Snowpiercer, there we go,
yes.
Where they also try to change the sky. But then I remembered I threw in a little Matrix reference, because that was also referenced in that movie.
Part and parcel. yeah, I knew that Qatar just didn't make a whole lot of sense to start with.
Well, no, and then it sort of became clear that it made a lot less sense for several reasons.
Yeah, like, I don't even know how, like, because you need to have X number of stadiums, too.
Sure, so they're building all these stadiums right now, and that may be why they selected them so far in advance, so that they could, you know, feel comfortable going ahead and starting to build these stadiums, knowing that they will get the, you know, the World Cup, but, you know, also knowing that it's going to take a long time to be able to build all these stadiums.
But then that's part of the problem too, is the weather conditions for these idiots building this stadium. I mean, it's literally deadly weather.
Yes. And I saw that they were expecting to have like 4,000 people die during the construction of this, of these venues, which is, I mean, that's really insane. I mean, that's like more than 9/11, for goodness sakes. That's terrible. And, it's, you know, people from other countries who are poor workers who kind of come in.
Yeah, a lot of African people or Indian,
mm-hmm.
because it is kind of far west in the Arabic area.
So there's several reasons not to be happy about this turn of events here.
Yeah, it just seems completely ludicrous. And that's one of those ones where it's just like, no, you're like, sir, you are out of control.
Right. Well, here's the thing, though. Like, speaking of Seth Blatter, because he is basically, like, been saying there's no way to reverse the decision of FIFA. Like, they're going to have it in Qatar, and that's just the way it is. Like, and when you think about it, I mean, he was just elected again as president, right?
Right. After the arrest, he was reelected to a fifth term.
And there is no, as we mentioned, there's no evidence of him actually giving or receiving any kind of bribe, because he is able to kind of insulate himself by having other people do it for him.
Right. That was kind of the interesting thing, too, about the whole situation, because I guess I didn't even realize that he had had these charges against him, well, yeah, as early as 98, that he was on the take.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's been a long time now.
Right. Because another thing is that there's no, and this may be changing, but, you know, they're organized in Switzerland, which has very lax laws in terms of, you know, as we said, investigating businesses.
Well, and then that's the other thing that they noted about this, is that it's not a business.
Right, they're registered as a nonprofit.
Yes, they are a nonprofit. Like, even the NFL isn't
that, well, on. The NFL actually is a nonprofit. The like head office of the NFL is a nonprofit.
Oh yeah, that's what it is.
So,
but the NFL itself is not.
All the teams are not.
Yeah, all the teams are not. That's, yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
But still.
Well, there's a little bit of a difference there. Then it's not like these countries to tell you are the truth, paying some type of tax like all the teams are.
Well, no, they are, but it's like the power is still with the head office, though, right? I mean, FIFA kind of is the head office of world soccer. They're not the owners of say, like, team, you know,
England.
Yeah,
right.
But they kind of set up the rules for how it's played, which I guess is like the NFL, you know, office basically being a tax-free organization. So,
right.
I guess you could think of FIFA as being an evil, even eviler version of the NFL head office.
If you really hate Roger Goodell, you should hate Sepp Blatter even more, is what we're telling you.
Yeah, because this guy has billions of dollars, you know, going through his organization, but really, literally no one is, you know, responsible to look at all at his, you know, how much he's paid or how much anybody's paid or any of their expenditures or incomes. It's just like the one guy said that they're bound by the same rules as the Swiss yodeling club, you know, and they're a $1 billion organization.
And that was the other interesting thing. Like, well, again, just because this has been taken, I can't believe, and then maybe this blows up my plan from last week there, or the last show, where I was saying, just get inside of the gang and disrupt it somehow. Like, no one seems to be able to get inside of the gang here to actually be able to disrupt it so far.
Well, I don't know, because they did have those British journalists, or tabloid journalists, I guess, went undercover and, like, were filming themselves talking to these, you know, different soccer officials, and they were pretty much coming out and saying that they were willing to be bribed for, I mean, they didn't say those words, but
right
through the course of the clips, you could see that that was what was being said, I guess. So
most definitely.
Yeah.
If, you met some financial criteria, you were getting help.
Yeah. Which, and you can hardly blame, in some sense, I guess. I mean, if you are in control of something that's so like valuable a decision, and overall, like, it's not going to take that much to, you know, it's going to make a big difference for, like, you know, this would be a life changing amount of money, I guess is what I'm saying, for, like, these people who are getting these bribes, especially if they come from a poorer country and they're getting, like, you know, $1 million plus or whatever. I mean, I think some of them were more than that.
Oh, right. But that's the problem, is that, and that would just be interesting in and of itself to figure out what these people actually spent the money on. Mm. Like, they kept on describing it like all these people had sob stories about how they're going to build schools for the children and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. But then they should send all the money through them, and they'll make sure it gets to the right people.
Right. Yeah. That's what, to me is,
which is basically what's going on in this whole organization. It sounds like, you know, that's just asking for trouble. I mean, even if you started out, like, I think this is what I'd like to say, is like, even if you started out with good intentions as, like, this organization, like, without having anybody, like, checking up on you, you're going to end up doing some, pretty shady shit. Like, just like the, you know, just like the law enforcement in this country, I'd say, Kevin.
Well, Ken, that might be one of your smoother segues.
Thank you.
Yeah, there are certainly a number of people who call into conduct the police force these days.
Yes, and it's been in the news a lot.
Yes, it has been.
But, you know, it seems like a very emotional issue, I guess I'd say, for people. And part of it, I think, for, you know, I'd say white people, is that we kind of think of the cops as maybe there's problems, but like they're still, you know, heroes for what they do, kind of, I guess. It's kind of the way that, speaking for myself, is the way I would think about police.
Right. It's certainly the way I would think of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not also been on the other, have not been allowed really much of a chance. I shouldn't say allowed, but I have not experienced
right.
much.
But you've had some like negative experiences with police, you know, getting tickets and things like that. So,
yes.
I wouldn't say that you're a lover of police, you know, cops necessarily.
Well, you know, it was kind of funny. I was thinking about it, and I wonder about how much of it was just my age at the time of some of these things happening. Because I just haven't really had any problems. Like, I look at 16-year-olds now sometimes, and I just kind of shake my head.
Oh, yes. Those kids, huh?
Those crazy kids. And I'm just like, you know what? I was probably an asshat like that, too.
Well, yeah.
I was like, maybe I had that coming. at least the ticket when I was 16, I'm like, maybe that's just being a jerk off. Like, there's a possibility.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you kind of question what might have happened in the past after you've kind of lived a couple extra years.
Right. But I guess, you know, that's true. But like, so you haven't had any really negative experiences with the police when you think about it. Like unfair, probably. You're saying that you had some probably fair run-ins with the police.
Oh.
And I would say the same thing.
Right. I have certainly been part or party to any involvement with the police that I've been involved with.
You can kind of see where they're coming from at this point.
Yes, whether it's traffic tickets or maybe the party got a little too loud.
Right. Yes, that makes sense.
You know, not always the funnest thing to do, but I certainly understood where the police were coming from.
Right. Now, you know, compare that to stories of other people who've had with the police, and, you know, there's a big difference, but...
yes, I am definitely not dead from any of my experiences.
Right. But, you know, I think it is worth pointing out, you know, that... I guess police do actually, like, in terms of the dangers of the working as a police officer, they're actually not as dangerous as you would think, necessarily.
Well, that was one where I meant to pull the article, because I think it still said, like, number 11 or something in that.
Right.
And I'm just like... Well, 11's still pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, it is true.
In some ways, the article's almost like, it's not even in the top 10. It's number 11. It's just like, okay, come on, man. Like, that still makes it fairly dicey.
True, but I think what their point was, like, considering, like, what they are paid, and, like, they understand that it's dangerous, like, actually, you know, like, your garbage man has a greater chance of being killed than a police officer, which is kind of a weird way to think about it, I guess. But in terms of, they actually, sanitation workers die in the line of duty at twice the rate the police do. So, I mean, that's not something you would typically think of. In terms
no,
of,
no, and I'll tell you what, if they die now, like. That's really weird, because I only see one guy in a truck with a mechanical arm these days. If he's dying somehow, I don't want to know how he's dying. Like, that's just got to be really weird. Someone's murdering him on the job, I think.
Yeah, I think that is interesting. I mean, I don't know if... I was wondering the same thing. Is it, like, machinery-related? And I would assume so. I mean, they do have, like, a powerful crushing... equipment with them on their truck. I don't know. Or during the drop off, or who knows? That'd be interesting. Maybe a future topic for us to look into. how are these sanitation workers being killed, which seems like something that you would want to fix. But
yeah, I mean, the old-timey ones who hung off the back of the truck, I could see it. But I have not seen anyone hanging off the back of a truck anytime recently.
Oh, and loggers have a fatality rate that's 11 times higher than cops.
Oh, yeah. I knew that the logging was the most dangerous, and that just seems like trouble just altogether.
Right. So you could have that, you know, I'm sure the deadliest catch would be above police officers somewhere.
Yes. Yeah, that is, that's up there also. But I mean,
so it, I guess I feel like it may be, you know, a lot, and the average beat cop makes more, well, costs more than $150,000 a year. So that's probably more than a garbage man. I'm not sure, but
garbage man makes pretty decent money,
but we maybe like 70,000
owned one.
Okay, but you're talking about the owners are not the ones who are dying, I would assume.
Yeah, but his, well, it's because no one wants to do the job.
Right.
That it does, you do actually make good money.
Right.
There is something to be said for garbage personnel.
But I feel like, yeah, the police officers, like, there's people out there who would do that job, you know. I don't know. It's just a point of view, I guess, to like send, to say like, well, really, it is dangerous to be a police officer, but maybe not more so than other jobs.
Oh yeah, that would not be cool to. For the most part, that's not cool to say.
Right, but that kind of is the feeling, I guess, that people have about police, that they are doing this incredibly dangerous job. Now, there's something to be said, I think, for like going out and knowing that you're going to be just seen negatively by a lot of the people that you're dealing with. Like, I feel like that is kind of like a real sort of stress that you might have to deal with.
Yeah, that part would be really strange, to just constantly be hated. It would be hard to get yourself out of that cycle mentally.
Right.
I would think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, usually, at least in this article, they mentioned, you know, black communities and Hispanic communities for the most part.
Being kind of treated poorly.
Right. And it's one of those things that just seems, it happens once and then the cycle keeps on going and it just kind of snowballs until you have things like Ferguson or, and that's been pretty crazy about Baltimore, that they've had as many murders since the riots as they did the entire earlier part of the year.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Yeah, I know. And I think that was another point that they mentioned, was that it's, you know, in terms of murder rate, you're actually more likely to be murdered living in Baltimore, a certain Baltimore neighborhood, than you would be being a police officer. That was another example. But so, yeah, that's obviously a big problem.
But, yeah, and it's, you know, it's just kind of weird. Like, you can get away from it. Like, I know that there are some not-so-nice places in Columbus, but it's pretty easy to stay out of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that was, you know, I don't, it wasn't really part of what we were reading about this time, but I remember hearing about it in Columbus. Like, there used to be, you know, what they called redlining, where, like, there would be maps drawn up that said, like, okay, this is where, you know, black people can live, and basically they're not allowed to buy houses in other areas of the city, and, like, banks wouldn't approve loans, and, you know, they would have rules designed to keep people in certain neighborhoods. So, I feel like that's a story people don't necessarily know about either. So
I was not familiar with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure that it happened all over the country, but, so that's a, you know, if you wonder why there's these, economically depressed, ghettos in every city, there's actually a good reason for it. So that's a bit of a problem. But, you know, these people that live in the neighborhoods that are being targeted are, you know, there was an example in that Vox article that was written by a former, a current minority, but a former police officer, who said how an experience he had when he was arresting or responding to a scene where a police officer had asked for help. And what had happened is the person had gotten away that he was chasing. And so, like, they just went up to a random house and knocked on the door and accused the guy who answered of trying to hide the suspect.
Yeah, despite the fact that he was on crutches.
And, you know, he was just there by himself. So they, like, you know, roughed him up and punched him. The one punched him in the groin, he said.
Yeah, I believe the woman officer did.
Yeah, and then, like, threw him on the ground, and he, like, couldn't get up to get his crutches. And the supervisor came and, like, beat him up some more because the female officer said he assaulted her. So, I mean, that's pretty messed up. I mean, obviously, you're going to see the police as your enemy in a very real sense. And I've heard, you know, somebody tell me a story in the neighborhood I used to live in of people getting arrested and, like, their heads smashed down on the, you know, police car. And, you know, maybe you did something wrong, but, or maybe not. Who knows? I don't know. But people shouldn't be treated that way, I don't think.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like it's, it doesn't seem like it's necessary. Like, it's one of those things that, but it is one of those things too, where I think that adversarial relationship just makes things worse. And right. It's hard to barter
so like if you, yeah,
that
if you,
peace.
If you were just one cop and you wanted to, like, make a better, you know, relationship with the community, you're going to find it a pretty freaking hard job because, like, everything has already been, like, set for so long that there's such a history. And then I don't know if you saw that in Chicago, how they had that, like, basically, like, torture chamber set up in a building that the police would bring suspects to and, like, electrocute them and, like, get them to confess to crimes and things. And it's like, how many people had to have known about that, but just kind of, like, turned the other, you know, turned their eyes away from it, basically, and decided that they were okay with it or didn't want to look into it, you know? It's just pretty... It's pretty easy to see where people are having a problem with the police. And I think so much of the reaction into saying, like, you know, defending cops reflexively, you need to, like, maybe take a step back and really see what's happening.
Well, and I think this is one where it always drives me a little batty in general, that it doesn't seem like you can take a couple from column A and a couple from column B sometimes. It always seems like the cop's a hero or the cop sucks.
Right.
There isn't, okay, there's a way to make this better for everyone involved.
Right. It's very emotional, I would say.
Right. It's just like, okay, let's calm down for a second. Okay, nobody's perfect. We got it. We know that the cops are probably putting up with too much bullshit anyway. You know, I mean, some of these
guys... They're having a stressful job, I would say. You know?
Yeah, they definitely have a stressful job. And some of these people involved are repeat offenders. It's not like they're kind of new at the game or anything like that either.
Sure. And I think that, you know, you start to have a few bad experiences and it kind of, like, is going to color your reactions to everybody else because you're just going to try to protect yourself maybe in some ways.
Right.
And then basically if that's what everybody else is doing anyway, then you're just going to pick up on it. At least like the guy in the article, the former police officer said, basically 15% of the people who are, you know, on the force are going to do the right thing all the time. And then 15% are going to, like, always find a way to get around the rules and do basically improper things. And the other 70% are basically going to go along with whatever, you know, whoever they happen to be working with. So, which actually made sense to me and can explain, like, why there can be these problems.
Yeah, so I mean, you end up having some swing, well, real swing voters there, which I guess doesn't surprise me either. I just think that there are some people that really get hung up on these things, and, you know, just even in their own mind, it's even worse, the collateral that happens between each episode. Like, each negative episode is more like two to that person.
Well, I mean, when it happens to you or someone in your family, I mean, that's going to be a huge deal, I would say.
Right.
So it makes sense. And then for people who have, you know, lost a husband who is a police officer or a family member, I mean, that's going to be a big deal for them, too. So obviously, I can see why people are emotional about it. But, you know, I feel like people maybe aren't as aware of, like, how the system is racist, and it has been racist, and maybe people need to think about just changing the system, how it works, which we've been doing, obviously, but I feel like, you know, it's still everybody knows that, you know, if you're going to go hassle someone in a poor neighborhood, you know, who's black, like, if you're a police officer, like, you're probably going to get away with it, you know, and, like, that's what's been the norm. And even if it is a small percentage of police officers that are, or, you know, a minority of police officers, at least, who are doing this sort of thing, it's definitely going to be impacting the whole neighborhood that it's living in. Like, everybody knows somebody, you know. It doesn't have to happen 100% of the time for it to, like, really affect everybody. So it's just kind of a bummer, and hopefully we'll get better. But, you know, you just need to be aware of it, I think.
Well, and that's kind of the other thing. It's just, I don't know. Everything's just weird. Like, we always talk about the gadgets of the future, and I just think it's the people of the future, too. Like, everything's just kind of, because, I mean, the one article had it about all the body cameras and everything, or was that maybe an extra article that I was looking at?
Well, that basically, that's the other thing, is that people say that they should have body cameras at all times, and I think that makes some sense. I mean,
yeah, because
how else are you going to know what's actually going on, you know, unless you can see it?
That the calls for police brutality dropped really low in the one district that wore them.
I mean, that makes perfect sense.
But then there was the problem. Well, the only problem that they had seen was people shutting off the cameras. I'm not sure if the body cameras were able to be shut off.
Well, that's what you would have to work on, and, like, make it be an offense or something if they turn off their cameras, you know, or, you know, put tape over them or something. I don't know. But because they are really working as representatives of all of us, so I feel like it makes sense to be able to see what they're doing, you know?
Oh, right. But then we'd also have to do, like, there's kind of that weird invasion of privacy that people want to do now. Like, if the police officer forgot to shut the camera off when he was on his own time, he ends up doing something dumb, like, he'd end up getting charged for it.
Well, maybe he shouldn't be doing something dumb, I guess, but, you know.
Right, but if you accidentally left it on, you could get the short end of the stick just as easy.
Well, I think you could have it as part of the police uniform, as kind of like a wearable, maybe with your body armor or something like that, so that you wouldn't have it on all the time.
Right.
But, you know, I would say that would be something that people weren't interested in. It's like, whatever he does off duty is fine. But, what was I going to say? Something about, you know, because they are working for all of us. I already said that.
Yeah. You did say duty in there.
Duty. I said duty.
Yeah. I wasn't really going to mention that.
You know, I think if you make it a condition of being a police officer that you're going to lose some privacy. I mean, it's like people who work as a cashier, like, they're being recorded all the time, you know, at some places where the owner wants to see, make sure nobody's stealing from the register or whatever.
Like, yeah. Well, at any time, I just went in to get a permit this past Friday. I was on camera the whole time I was there.
True. And so you have the choice not to be a police officer, I guess, if you don't want to be recorded. But I think it makes a lot of sense to do that, given that we know there's these problems going on.
Yeah. And I mean, I do think that it will help cut down on the problems.
Yeah.
Just in general. Like, I think it keeps everyone on their best behavior, which it sucks because then you do kind of get this Big Brother vibe coming out.
Yeah, but everyone's better when somebody's watching you. I just think that's
right.
That's just part of human nature, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that we've got to work against ourselves a lot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's things that we're good at and things that we're not so good at. And being good when nobody's watching, that's something that I think, in general, people are not very good at. So, to be honest, I'm not as good at it. It's a lot easier for me when I know somebody's going to, you know, notice that I'm doing something that I shouldn't be. So, that's just the way it goes.
Oh, man. Well, I'm sure you should not have been watching some of these videos at work.
Yeah, you're right. That would be a waste of company resources and company time.
Yeah, and we did not do that today by watching our third video right here in my humble abode.
Yes, that's true. We were, you know, this is something that I don't know why, if I'm the only one who's fascinated by it, but just the concept that they're really, that birds and dinosaurs are somehow related, I guess, is what I always thought about. But it turns out to actually be that they're not just related, that birds actually are dinosaurs, Kevin.
Yeah, the definition that was created for dinosaurs fits birds. Despite the fact that they do fly and they're supposed to be land creatures.
But they are descended of dinosaurs directly.
Correct.
Yes, they're so that means that they fall under the dinosaur umbrella.
And I was not too aware that they had made mention, and I'm not. I guess I'm not too surprised, though, that the fact that pterodactyls were just one in many a species of.
And they're actually
flying, flying dinosaurs.
We actually saw that pterodactyls are actually not a real species. That was just sort of a catch-all statement that somebody or tag that somebody came up with to explain what these skeletons were that were actually discovered to be from different species. But it's what did they say? Pterosaur.
Yeah, was pterosaur. They just went slightly more vague.
Yes. So.
Flying lizard. And yeah, and birds are not related to those flying lizards, which is also...
Yeah, pterosaurs, not dinosaurs. Very confusing title there, I gotta say.
And especially since they lived with the dinosaurs.
Right, but somehow...
But they were not dinosaurs.
Yes, something to do with how the body skeleton was put together. And actually, that is another point of the chart that accompanies this topic. From the very funny webcomic XCDK, I believe. They have a chart showing with empirical proof that sparrows and Tyrannosaurus rex are more closely related than T-Rex and Stegosaurus based on, you know, how many millions of years ago they lived, to, like, how far apart they are on the genealogy family tree there.
Right. There was a pretty decent gap. I mean, the T-Rex and the sparrow were on the same side of that branch. Right. You needed to go back at least one evolution to get to a common place for the... or I believe it was two, actually.
Whereas, yeah, the sparrow and T-Rex, I mean, when you see the skeletons, they both have the same kind of build in terms of how they walk. And
yeah, it is kind of weird that they have the long arms, or long legs and short arms.
Yes. I think the sparrow just has a long finger, basically, that forms the wing.
Right.
So their arms are actually still small, on the small side. But,
yeah, it's kind of wacky just to think of things so, that way.
Does that mean that birds are lizards, technically? This is what I want to get at.
Oh, well, I had no idea. I mean, that's completely out of left field.
Okay. Obviously, no surprise to longtime listeners, we did not do all the research we could have.
Well, someone did not pass along the research they should have.
No, it just occurred to me.
I believe lizards and reptiles in general need to be cold-blooded, and birds are not cold-blooded.
True, but neither were dinosaurs, actually, they're saying now, that they were actually warm-blooded, and they...
No.
Yeah, they gave birth to eggs, but just like birds do today, so... which was, I think, something that they started to figure out in the 90s. Like, I don't think that was being taught when we were young, I want to say.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was not familiar with that that update.
Yeah, so it's pretty crazy. Like, but they must in some way be lizards, right? Because that's what the name dinosaur means, terrible lizard, right? Or no. Yeah, I think so, right?
Yeah, well, pterosaur was flying lizard.
There you go.
So, yeah, I would guess the sore is the lizard part.
So a bird is a lizard? Is this what we're to get at?
Well, birds are definitely dinosaurs. I don't think they're lizards still.
I don't know, man. This would have been a big boost, I think, if we could have...
This is getting mind-fucky.
How many levels deep are we here now?
Leonardo DiCaprio keeps on going into brain cell after brain cell. I can't keep track which one he's in.
All right, hold on here. I think I have a quick summary that might help us out. Turtles, snakes, lizards... Okay. Reptiles are vertebrates that have scales on at least some part of their body, leathery or hard-shelled eggs, and share a number of other features. Okay, so birds are not lizards. We know that. Snakes, lizards, turtles, crocodiles, and birds are reptiles. So, birds are not lizards, but they are reptiles.
Ah.
Which is kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, I guess they do have scaly feet, usually.
Yeah. And the same material, their feathers are made of the same collagen that scales would be made of. It's just that they have a different... structure, you know, a much more complicated structure, but it works out to help them fly for sure.
Huh.
And protect them from the elements pretty
well,
good.
Well, yeah, I guess I did not get the update that reptiles can be warm-blooded now.
Well, yes, maybe lizards have to be cold-blooded, but reptiles can be warm-blooded. I mean, they are, according to that Google snippet.
Huh. Well, go figure.
I don't know how you cite a Google snippet if, the first thing that pops up on your search result
Google's
there.
Always right. They're not like Wikipedia, damn it.
Yeah, they're a benevolent dictatorship, so they would not lead us astray.
Benevolent information dictator.
Yes. Let us all bow down to our new philosopher king. All hail Google. I'm willing to go along with them on this one. That's just something I never thought about before, even though we've talked about this topic ahead of time, or at least preordained it ahead of time.
Oh.
But, yeah. Well, we're about to the beer segment of our show here, I would say.
Yeah, and I do think that it's okay. I feel like it came out a little bit flat, but other than that, I'm okay. I was a little bit concerned. I don't think it's my finest work.
I don't know. I feel like different beers are going to have different levels, like different styles of beers will be different levels of foaminess, maybe, or different kinds of beers. Some beers are less foamy than others, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Well, and I was a little concerned that this would have a little hop sediment in it. It did not taste sedimenty at all.
Yeah, there was some kind of sediment in the bottom of my glass, but...
Okay, well, it might have been a little extra hop. I think I'll be able to serve that at the wedding. So, another successful one.
No, and yeah, I'm putting this one in the whim? Not the whim column, but the win column is what I'm trying to say. So, yeah, this was a success in your beer crafting career, I have to say.
Okie dokie. Well, for the beverages that I had last night at Land Grant Brewing, to be an unofficial beer of the show outside of my own beer. yes, I will have that review up sometime soon.
Is it a favorable review?
Well, I had to have their flight again a second time. I had it last fall, and I did not get around to the review very quickly.
Gotcha.
And I felt like after going to Lineage Brewing, which is down in Clintonville, that I should retest the ones at Land Grant. And plus, it does help that they are one of the official home away from homes for the Columbus Crew.
That makes sense.
So we went down to watch a crew match. I had a flight. And they had two extra beers, too. So that did change things. They just had their original four lineup there previously. This time they had their black IPA, similar to the Black Belt IPA that we just had. And they had the Creamsicle, which was pretty interesting. It was...
that's like a summer beer, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it kind of had that orangey creamsicle. Like it was like a cream, not cream soda beer, but a cream ale.
Okay. Well, that sounds pretty good.
Because it's a little bit different than, although it's somewhat similar to the Kolsch. So it seemed like a Kolsch / cream ale kind of mix.
That's kind of a lower alcohol percentage, I believe.
Yeah, and it's pretty low in the hops department, but because it's pretty clean, the hops show through a little bit more.
Yeah. I want to say I had a beer that was similar to that, but not a creamsicle. It was more like a, what do you call that? Grapefruit kind of flavored.
Oh, right.
But kind of a similar idea, but without the cream. But it was pretty good.
Cool. Well, at DeFrango 11, at Gozer 33, at Stunt Granny. Yeah, this has been another fine edition of OPA.
Yeah, a strange daylight edition, but I hope everybody enjoyed it. And have a great week.